you actually look up and it's worked, because technology has got a terrible habit of letting me down on these occasions. So that's good. Well, that was a great time together, wasn't it, to worship the Lord together? And it's a privilege to join you in prayer and worship and praise this morning. And it's good to be with you. But we're going to start. I'm just going to show you a video. It only lasts a few seconds. If I can find it. Seem to have lost my video. No, I haven't. It's there. Right. You might remember this. It was on the television quite a lot. It took place in the riots in London a couple of months back, and you'll sort of see there's a chap down there who's been hurt, and you'll see some people coming to help him. So that's the gist of it. And there you go. You can see he's got a nosebleed or something, been hit in the head, and a couple of very helpful passers-by come and help him to his feet, or so it seems. As they're helping him, they're taking his stuff. Well, simple video that I'm sure you've all seen before, and it's just to help remind you that things are not always as they seem. That's the only reason I've shown you that. Things are not always as they seem. And the passage we're going to look at today, and we'll come to it in a few moments, the passage we're going to look at today is a time when things weren't quite what they seemed. And it happens in the book of Joshua. And Joshua and the Israelites, God had promised them that he'd give them the land of Canaan to live in. And they were working their way through, sort of, you know, taking possession of the land of Canaan, and they'd fought against Jericho, and I'm sure you know the story about Jericho and how all the walls fell down, and they fought against Ai, and things went badly at first in Ai, and then God gave them the victory, and the first time then it was because there'd been someone sinning and they hadn't dealt with it, and then God gave them the victory. So they'd had two victories, and at this point then some of the Canaanite kings are starting to sort of get a little bit nervous and wondering exactly what the future holds for them. And as Joshua and the Israelites are sitting there contemplating where they should go next, then some rather weary travellers turned up in the Israelite camp. And these weary travellers, they said, "We've been coming a long way. You know, we're from a land far away. Look, look how far we've come, because our bread, it was fresh when we packed it, but it's gone all mouldy. And look at the state in our shoes. They got holes in them from the long journey that we've travelled in. And look, our wineskins are all cracked and the wine's all pouring out of them. We've come a long way. But it was worth the journey. Because you know what? Our king from a long way away wants to make a treaty with you Israelites and just say, look, your enemies are our enemies. We'll be your allies. You know, we'd like to make a treaty with you. Is that good? Is that a good idea?" And Joshua and the Israelites, they looked at them a little bit suspiciously, and they said, "Well, you know, we have a commandment from our God which says, don't make a treaty with the kings of this land. How do we know that you're not from nearby? You know, maybe we'd be going against God's will if we entered into a treaty with you, if you're some Canaanite kings." And they said, "No, we're from a long way away. Look, we've shown you once. Look at our bread. It's gone moldy. It was fresh when we left. Look at our shoes. They were new when we put them on. They got holes in them. Look at our wineskins. They're all cracked. We've come a long way. We just wanted to journey with you because you're so successful. Our king wants to make a treaty with you." And the Israelites considered, and they entered into a treaty. But actually, it was a deception. Just like in that first video, they weren't helping, they were enemies. These people were actually Gibeonites who just came from a couple of days' march from where the Israelites were camping. And the Israelites had been deceived, and they'd entered into a treaty with people with whom God had commanded that they shouldn't enter a treaty. Let's read the passage. So it's Joshua chapter 9, and it says this. Hang on. Let me just check I've got my verses right. I think I've actually copied that from a different translation of the Bible from the one that I'm reading, so the words are not going to match exactly, but you'll get the gist of it. "Now when the kings west of the Jordan heard about these things, those in the hill country and the western foothills and along the entire coast of the Great Sea as far as Lebanon. The kings of the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, they came together to make war against Joshua and Israel. However, when the people of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, they resorted to a ruse. They went as a delegation whose donkeys were loaded with worn-out sacks and old wineskins cracked and mended. The men put worn and patched sandals on their feet and wore old clothes. All the bread of their food supply was dry and moldy. Then they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and the men of Israel, "We've come from a distant country. Make a treaty with us." The men of Israel said to the Hivites, "But perhaps you live nearby. How can we make a treaty with you? We're your servants," they said to Joshua. But Joshua asked, "Who are you? And where do you come from?" And they answered, "Your servants have come from a very distant country because of the fame of the Lord your God, for we have heard reports of him, all that he did in Egypt and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, Sihon king of Heshbon and Og king of Bashan, who reigned in Ashtaroth. And our elders and all those living in our country said to us, 'Take provisions for your journey. Go there and meet them and say to them, we are your servants, make a treaty with us. This bread of ours was warm when we packed it at home on the day we left to come to you, but now see how dry and moldy it is. And these wineskins that we filled were new, but see how cracked they are, and our clothes and sandals are worn out by the very long journey.'" And then this is the critical verse, right? Note this verse if you didn't notice any of it. It says, "The men of Israel sampled their provisions, but did not inquire of the Lord. Then Joshua made a treaty of peace with them to let them live, and the leaders of the assembly ratified it by oath." So, look at the mistake they made, right? They had in front of them what was seeming evidence that they had people from a long way away who it was okay for them to enter into a treaty with. And they were deceived. But they made the critical mistake, they didn't ask God before they did it. They didn't wait on the Lord, they trusted their senses, they trusted their own judgment. And we can make the same mistake. We can trust our own judgment on things that seem obvious and seem like common sense, and we neglect to ask God for guidance, God who wants to guide us in all things. We neglect to ask him for guidance, and we end up making bad judgments and making terrible mistakes. There's a man called Bruce Gotcher who wrote about this passage, and he gave examples of lies that we deceive ourselves, misjudgments that we can sometimes make. He talked about lies that we believe won't hurt anyone, and we think it's okay because we've trusted our judgment instead of asking God whether it's right to lie. With the innocent flirtations that we think will never lead to anything, but do. Dollars that you can tell he's American, dollars that we take from a drawer that we think will never be missed, but we know that God really wouldn't want us to do that. The belief that we might have that the scholar must have good evidence for saying the Bible's no longer irrelevant for today, because after all, he's a scholar. Sometimes we trust our rational judgments and they get us into trouble. Alan Redpath, another writer, said this about trusting our judgments. He said this, "Never, never, never trust your own judgment. When common sense says that a course is right, lift your heart to God. For the path of faith and the path of blessing may be in a direction completely opposite to that which you call common sense. When voices tell you that action is urgent, that something must be done immediately, refer everything to the tribunal of heaven. Then, if you're still in doubt, dare to stand still. If you're called on to act and you have no time to pray, don't act. If you're called on to move in a certain direction and can't wait until you have peace with God about it, don't move. Be strong enough and brave enough to stand and wait on God, for none of them that wait on him shall ever be ashamed. That is the only way to outsmart the devil." It's very easy for us to trust our own judgment and think that we're doing what's right and what's proper. But if we don't lay it before God, our judgment might be wrong. And the devil is all the time trying to trap us. A year or so ago, I talked to you about a passage from the Psalms, and I can remember showing you a picture that I took in Scotland. Oh, goodness me, my things come the wrong direction. That was supposed to come later, that passage, but here we go. I showed you a not very good picture that I took in Scotland of an Arctic tern. That's what that is, a little Arctic tern. And I took this photo by the side of a loch in Scotland, and I told you about the Arctic terns and how they, you know, they're tiny little delicate birds. You know, you could hold one in your hand, and yet they manage to live in the most extreme conditions. They can live in the Arctic. This is out in the wilderness in Scotland, miles from where any people live, because it's too hostile an environment, really, for people up on in the Western Isles. And this is an unpopulated, deserted loch. And yet these delicate little birds, they've got the longest migratory path of any other creature that lives. They migrate to the South Pole for the summer down south, and they come to the North Pole or up into the Arctic for the summer in the Northern Hemisphere, and they can live anywhere in the world. They can live in the tropics as they're migrating through. They can live in the polar regions. They can live up in the air, as you can see that tiny little speck flying up there, and they can go under the water to catch the fish. They can float on the water. The whole place is theirs. They've got complete freedom, and yet they were nearly wiped out in Victorian times because people wanted to take the beautiful white feathers in their tails to make hats. So the fashion for white feathers in Victorian ladies' hats nearly wiped them out. And I used I've actually got a slightly better picture of one there. And you might remember, I think there's a quote from the psalm here, and this is what I spoke on to you about a year ago, and I'm reminding you of it because it's relevant to this passage. And in Psalm 91, then the psalmist says this: surely he, that is God, surely he'll save you from the fowler's snare. And just as the Victorians were trying to take away the freedom of those birds and kill them, the devil wants to take away our freedom, and he wants to snare us. And all the time, he's trying to deceive us. And just when we've got the most confidence that the things that we're doing are right, and we neglect to ask God, then that's the time when we'll fall into his snare. And we'll be like one of those terns, caught and killed with the tail feathers plucked out, rather than living a life of freedom. The times when he deceives us, the times when he gets us to just readjust our priorities about things that seem important and things that seem right and things that seem relevant, but perhaps get in the way of God. The time when suddenly our houses become more important to us than God's house, the church. The people, that is, of course, not the building. But the times when we start to believe that our appearance, the labels on our clothes, matter more than the labels on our hearts. Do we belong to God, or do we want to belong to a fashion house? The times when we start to believe that our leisure time is more important than the time that we spend with God. The times, in other words, that we choose to sit and slump in front of the television rather than pray or read our Bible, or when we've neglected to do so. At times when we take something good and important, like our families, and we put them before God, who's more important. The times when we believe that our position in work and our career matters more than our position before God. These are the things the devil's trying to snare us with. And at the time when we're looking at the situation rationally, then we'll use our judgment, and our judgment will tell us, well, it's very important that I spend time with my family this afternoon. Maybe it is, but maybe it's more important that we do God's work at that particular time. And I'm going to have to go back for the verse, aren't I? Because I got my slides in the wrong order. But this is what Solomon said about it, the wisest man who's ever lived. He says this: trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding, right? Trust in God, not on your own understanding. In all your ways, submit to him and he'll make your path straight. Let's not make the mistake that the Israelites made of, when faced with a slam dunk decision Or maybe faced with a slightly tricky decision which requires judgment. Let's not make the mistake of rushing into things which have got long-term consequences and doing it without reference to God. Because God wants to tell us how to live. So, they made a mistake. I suppose the question is what they did about it. Let me show you a picture that, if you've got any interest in football, you might remember. This this was the 1986 World Cup. Now, I've written down semi-final, but I've got a vague feeling it might have been a quarter-final, so I'm not quite sure. But it was between Britain and Argentina anyway, and this was not long after the Falklands War, so tensions between Britain and Argentina were really still quite high. And the ball kind of sort of found its way flying through the air into the into the England sort of penalty area, and there was just the goalkeeper, English goalkeeper, 6'1", nice and tall, and Maradona, 5'5", I believe, you know, sort of 7 or 8 inches before. It was obvious that the goalkeeper was going to be taller and bigger and able to get hold of it. But somehow or other, the ball seemed to bounce off Maradona's head instead of off the goalkeeper's. What a jumper, eh? Fantastic. And of course, he'd put his hand up and punched it. And the referee hadn't seen the handball. Now, that in itself was bad enough, is cheating. probably led to more bad feeling between Britain and Argentina than the Falklands War ever did. But that bit of cheating was bad enough. But interesting, of course, was the ongoing deception of Maradona, where he immediately rounded on his teammates and told them to celebrate. Otherwise, the referee wouldn't believe that the goal was real, because his teammates had all seen that he'd handballed it. And he maintained until his professional career was finished that, of course, no, I hadn't touched it. His famous quote was, "It went in the goal with a little bit of the head of Maradona and a bit of the hand of God." Wonderful quote. So there we go. So a deception which had consequences, right? A deception which influenced the way that two countries actually got on with each other. A deception which had huge consequences. And he maintained the deception. Make a mistake and maintain the deception. That's the Maradona approach. Let's have a look and see how the Israelites have lived. We'll carry on with the passage and reading in chapter 9 and verse 16. And I think I've got it up there for you. Yes, I do. Right, well, I've started at verse 14, which I'd read previously, so we'll read that again. It says, "The men of Israel sampled their provisions, but did not inquire of the Lord. Then Joshua made a treaty of peace with them to let them live, and the leaders of the assembly ratified it by oath. 3 days after they made the treaty with the Gibeonites, the Israelites heard that they were neighbors living near them. So the Israelites set out and on the third day came to their cities, Gibeon, Kephirah, Beeroth, and Kiriath-Jearim. But the Israelites did not attack them because the leaders of the assembly had sworn an oath to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. The whole assembly grumbled against the leaders. But all the leaders answered, 'We've given them our oath by the Lord, the God of Israel, and we can't touch them now. This is what we'll do to them. We'll let them live, so that wrath will not fall upon us for breaking the oath we swore to them.' But they continued, 'Let them live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers for the entire community.' So the leader's promise to them was kept." Oh, did I miss out some? Oh, no. I just read a little bit further than I put up there. Sorry for that. Okay. So the Israelites discovered they'd been deceived. And there was a bit of an investigation. And they jumped on their horses or donkeys or whatever they were using at the time, and they travelled and they arrived at the Gibeonite city, and they discovered that, sure enough, the people who told them they'd come from hundreds of miles away from a distant land had been telling lies, and they were actually near neighbours. And they confronted them and said, "Why did you lie to us?" And they said, "Well, you know, because we were scared of you. But hey, you made a treaty now." Now, at this point, the Israelites could have gone one of two ways. They could have said, "Well, you know, we made a treaty, but you'd lied to us. That means the treaty doesn't hold, And now, guess what? We're coming to invade, and we're coming to you next. Or they could have actually said, well, you know, we made a promise before God, and that means we have to stick to it. And the Israelites chose the latter course. They said, well, you know, we've entered into a treaty, and you know, hey, that's got to stand. You know, we're honest people. If we've given our word in the presence of God, we can't go back from it. And you know, that decision that they made had implications. If you run forward many generations to the day when Saul was king, then Saul attempted a bit of genocide, if you like. He tried to wipe out the Gibeonites. And you can read about that in 2 Samuel chapter 21. And when Saul tried to wipe out the Gibeonites, then a whole load of bad things happened to the Israelites. And they inquired after God, and they discovered that the reason that God was angry with them was because they'd breached an oath that had been made in God's presence generations before. And you find that the Gibeonites carried on living amongst Israel right the way through. They were exiled. Some of them were exiled into Babylon. And some of them returned. You find that if you read in the book of Nehemiah, that some of the families who returned were Gibeonites, who benefited from this treaty that had been made in Joshua's day. Had enormous long-term consequences. But you know, the thing I admire about the Israelites is this. They maintained their integrity. They'd made a mistake, but they lived with the consequences. They didn't compound it. They didn't compound it by sinning again, by lying or going back on the word, the promise that they made before God. They could have tried to justify it to themselves. They could have just said, the agreement's void. It was made on false pretenses, and then just gone and slaughtered the Gibeonites. They didn't do that. They stuck to their promises. They'd made a promise before God, and they were going to stick to the promise that they've given. People lie all the time, don't they? You know, all around us, we're surrounded by people who lie. We're surrounded by, you watch your television or go down to a football game and you'll see lying sportsmen all the time. You know for sure that a footballer will not tell the referee the truth about whether he dived or whether it was an accident or whether he touched the ball last before it went over the line or not. They lie all the time. It's just in their nature. People lie to insurers. You know, people lie all the time on insurance claims and try and get money that isn't theirs. People lie to the courts. I didn't do it. And people lie because they believe it helps them to win. They believe they get more out of life if they lie than if they don't lie. But you know, God doesn't want us to be like that. He wants us to be people of integrity. And maybe that marriage hasn't turned out the way that you imagined. But God wants us to hold true to the vows that we've made before him. Maybe that business deal that you've entered into is going to result in you losing money. But God wants you to hold true to the promises that you've made. Maybe you made a mistake, and you're the one who let in the goal in that important game that your team was playing. But that's not a reason for lying about it to the referee. Maybe you've promised God that you'll serve him in some way, and now the time has come to serve. And you've got something more interesting to do. That's not a reason to turn your back on the thing, on the promise that you've given to God. Maybe you've agreed to sell something, and now you've been offered more money by somebody else who wants to give you more for it. What should you do as a Christian? God wants us to be people of integrity. And our behavior reveals our character. And as Christians, we should be people who care more about what's right than what's expedient. And that's why Jesus said this. He said, All you need is simply to say yes or no. Anything else comes from, anything beyond this comes from the evil one. God is our witness. And God was the witness of the Israelites. And I'm sure that God was pleased with them when they held to the promises that they'd made. And we should trust God. I think I have this verse up. I hope I do. Oh, there we go. We read that one. No, the last verse I had. Oh, dear me. I'm in a mess this morning, aren't I? I can't remember which verses I got up and which ones I haven't. Right. Well, that one we just saw about. All we need to simply say is yes or yes, or anything beyond this comes from the evil one. But, you know, one thing we can be confident of is this. That when we're doing the right thing before God, then God is with us. And Paul reminds us of how God works in Romans chapter 8, and it says this. We know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. Don't think that you'll get real advantage by losing your integrity. You might get a short-term gain, but you lose your integrity, and you'll anger God. And I would prefer be on God's side and lose the short-term gain than be against him and seek to gain some short-term material benefit. But with God with us, then good can come from bad decisions, as happened here. So, what do we learn from this passage that we've looked at from Joshua? First thing is this. As we go through life, as you walk out and, the week starts, and all the time you've got to make decisions about what you should do and where you should be and what you should say and how you should deal with people, where as you're faced with those decisions in life, then don't make the mistake of walking by sight. That was the heading that I put at the beginning. Don't walk by sight. Don't just trust your judgment to do the obvious thing. Seek God's authority. Seek the facts. Seek God's authority. Remember, the devil is trying to steer you. Ask God for guidance as to what you should do. And you know, when, as inevitably will happen, you'll sometimes make mistakes. You'll forget to ask God's guidance. You won't listen to him properly. You'll do what he's told you not to do. Don't make the mistake the Israelites didn't make. Do what they did do, which is, having made a mistake, make sure that you uphold your integrity and you stand tall before God, knowing that you've done the right thing for him. We're going to carry on with a bit more of Joshua tonight, and we'll be picking up some more themes from later in the book. But that's, I think, what the Lord has to say to us from that passage.